welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cammerton. And this program is also streaming on the internet at www.thegaelichour.ca, where we also have archives and the playlist, a calendar of events that is going on. If you want to send me an email, the email address is austin@thegaelichour.ca. This program will be available as a podcast shortly after the live broadcast finishes at 9 o'clock this morning. The Gaelic Hour will no longer be broadcasting on Monday evenings. As of from next Sunday, we will have our music program starting 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, so we'll be running from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And there is no Gaelic Hour tomorrow night as we are into March. The schedule changes on the 1st of March. But I do need you to mark your calendar for a few events that are coming up. The Erin Luncheon, which is a fundraiser for St. Patrick's Home on Riverside, they have the annual luncheon on the 12th of March, and that runs from 11:30 to 3:30. Tickets are $35, and you can get tickets by calling the Foundation hotline at 613-260-2738. And entertainment that day includes Gail Gavin and her musicians. Cold is called for Erin, Dinner and Cayley, Saturday, March 13th, and that's from 6 p.m. at Marshall's The Harpist, with a three-course hot buffet. You need to get your tickets before March 4th if you wish to go to the dinner. Tickets are $25, 613-596-6191. Also, the Rose of Tralee selection event will be happening on Sunday, March 14th, and that's from at 3 p.m. at Library and Archives Canada. And there are four young ladies who have entered for the Rose. One young lady will be travelling to Ireland in June to represent Ottawa at the regional finals, and she will also receive $1,000 towards clothing and a year subscription from Ancestry.ca. There's still time, as the closing date is tomorrow. If you know of any young lady between 18 and 28 who may be interested, visit www.roseoftralee.ca. There's a Cayley on March 6th. And that is on Saturday night at the National Irish Canadian Cultural Centre, and that is down in St. Bridget's Church. That gets underway around 8 p.m. And also on Sunday, March 7th, Ambassador Declan Kelly will be honoured by the Irish organisations in Toronto as the Irish Person of the Year. Indeed, congratulations and an honour very, very well deserved. This program is brought to you in part by the generous support that we receive from the Heart and Crown and also from the Monterey Inn Resort. And now, let's talk to Dr. Pat Gillan.
January 1st saw the announcement of the honours list again this year, and the Irish have a lot to be proud of, because included in the honours list this year was Dr. Pat Gillan, who hails from Bamislough in County Galway, who is honoured with the Order of Canada, and I have Dr. Gillan on the phone with me from his office in Toronto. Dr. Pat Gillan, welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Thank you very much, Austin, and it's great to get caught up again after about 35 or 40 years of absence. We knew each other back in Ballinasloe, and I knew your family as well, so it's a great opportunity and a great pleasure and honor for me to speak to you this afternoon in this interview.
It is such a small world that from way back when, where people grew up in one part of the world and find themselves in another part of the world, and then paths cross again. And for you, as you say, it goes back to Bamislough. For the listeners, give a little bit of background on you and your family, Pat.
Well, often I was born in Bamislough, which is a town at that time of about 7,000 or 8,000 people. I was blessed in that I had very loving parents. One had a pub and a restaurant, my mom, and my dad was in construction. Both were very hard workers. I was one of four in their family. I was the eldest. I have two other brothers and a sister, and we all remain incredibly close friends over the last 40, 50 years. So I was so honored to really have been born in Bamislough, because it provided me with a great opportunity to be educated in that town, because it was one of the towns on the west coast of Ireland in the 60s and 70s that had a very good secondary school, as we know it, or a high school, as they mentioned in North America, Garbally, primary school was St. Grellan's School, where I went to, and again, an excellent school at that time. So I was the lucky person, or one of the lucky people in that town, to be afforded the opportunity to get to and complete school at both the undergraduate and secondary level. So I have great and fond memories of Ballinasloe, and continue to remain very much in touch with the town. I return there at least twice a year, usually brief visits to speak to, to meet with my family, except for my brother Tomas. The other two family members have left there. My sister Anna lives now in Port Leash, and she's a family doctor in Port Leash, married to John, her husband, and they have two children. And my brother Eamon is in Galway with Eileen, and he has three children. And myself, as you know, I emigrated to Canada. I'm sure we'll talk more about that momentarily.
We will indeed. And of course, as you say, at that time, Ballinasloe was very much a traditional Irish town, in that everybody knew everybody, or at least everybody knew everybody else's family.
You are absolutely right. It was so close and warm and friendly, and honestly, I think most of us who went to school there got to know each other incredibly well, and that was one of the real privileges of being brought up in a small town like that, and that you got to know people who worked, you know, in the bank, who were the teachers, who were people in construction, people in medicine. And I was lucky in that, being of a family which were involved in business, I got to know many of the doctors in the town, and I got to know some of the physicians and surgeons at a hospital called Portiuncla Hospital in Ballinasloe. And it was that meeting with some of the physicians and surgeons from that hospital and many of the other physicians in the town that I became interested in medicine. So if I was born in a bigger city or a larger town, I may not have had the opportunity to meet with those individuals who certainly had significant impact on the career direction that I embarked on at that time.
You mentioned that, you know, we were blessed in Ballinasloe with fine education, and Darbally has an awful lot of people around the world that it can boast have achieved very high success in a variety of fields. And I think the quality of the education that we managed to get at Garbley was something fantastic.
No question, Austin. I think at that time, and I still continue today, believe that Garbley is an excellent school. We know of so many leaders globally that have been educated there and have had significant impact on all fields, both in your own, Austin, and in mine in medicine, and in people in law and in business, and people as actors, writers, etc., etc. So I think it was a great school, and the fact that the clergy really were the really ran the school, I think was at that time very advantageous. In actual fact, I think. So, again, we were lucky.
You mentioned there your mom and your dad. That I know your mom was from Athenry.
That's right.
And she effectively, she was the publican in the family, and your dad then went out and was in construction. The background that you would have come from, that you were able to go and choose medicine, and that it was an indication, I think, also of the times, that there was tremendous opportunity for people through, certainly in the towns like Ballinasloe, where the education process open doors for an awful lot of people.
Well, you're absolutely right, Austin, in that, you know, there were some larger towns in Ballinasloe, but the fact that we had a wonderful secondary school in Garbally, and that we had some wonderful hospitals like Portiuncla Hospital, which was a general hospital at that time that took care of both the indigents and people, high-profile individuals, and had a great surgical unit, which was a stimulus to me, a great obstetrical and gynecologic unit. It had a great internal medicine unit. And, you know, the people in Ballinasloe were blessed in that they were taken care of in that hospital. And then we had the St. Bridget's Hospital, which was the psychiatric hospital that, in essence, almost cared for many of the unfortunate individuals with psychiatric illnesses almost through the whole of the west coast of Ireland. And both of these institutions and the hospital, both hospitals and the school, certainly were responsible for a sizable amount of work for people in the town, and brought in lots of money and provided a great infrastructure for financial support. And we also had wonderful banks in the town at that time, and I think we still have today. But I think that the fact that I was just born in a smaller town like that was actually advantageous and not really a deterrent to where I had planned to move to. And again, what I always say is that, in essence, if you can imagine it, I always say, if you can imagine it, you can achieve it, and if you can dream it, you can become it. And I think that that many of us, who even though we lived in a small town like Ballinasloe, had big dreams, and many of our dreams were realized.
Pat, we're going to take a short musical interlude, and after giving the amount of coverage we did to Ballinasloe, there's nothing better than to play a piece of music aptly called Ballinasloe.
Oh, thank you, Alison.
You are listening to The Gaelic Hour here on 297.9 FM, and we're chatting with Dr. Pat Galan, who hails from Ballinasloe, but is now a member of the Order of Canada. We'll be back with you shortly. Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM, and we're chatting with Dr. Pat Galan, who is in Toronto and chatting to us. even as we talk here on air, he's still in his working clothes. And for many of us, working clothes might be a suit or something else, but Dr. Galan, as you have been honored because of your work in surgery, so you said as we were coming, getting started, you're there in your greens.
That's absolutely right, Austin. I have been in the operating room since 8 o'clock this morning. My subspecialty in surgery is head and neck oncology and reconstruction, and I've just completed a 10-hour case, and I was a little worried towards the afternoon that I was going to be able to make it to have this interview with you, which I'm so pleased to do, Austin. And anyhow, I'm still in my office. I just got up from the operating room, which is on the third floor of our hospital, and I'm up on the eighth floor. And I'm so blessed to be in such a wonderful institution. I have no doubt that the University Health Network, or the Toronto General Hospital, Princess Margaret University, Toronto Western Hospital, is one of the premier hospitals in Canada. And to be a member of their surgical staff and to be chief of otolaryngology head and neck surgery, that's ENT head and neck surgery, and as chair of the department within the University of Toronto for that specialty, which is one of the great specialties in the cutting field, as I say, in the surgical field. I'm proud to be within this institution and have been here since July 1983. And prior to that, I was at the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario. And I was recruited to Toronto in 1983 and then moved up to the ranks of being assistant to associate and then to full professor. And then in 1989 was selected as the chief of the Department of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery within the University Health Network and the Toronto University of Toronto, and then as chair of the university department since 2002. And I just feel that the support and the infrastructure support and the guidance and the opportunities afforded me have been second to none since I came to this institution. I think during my early years, I did struggle here with the challenges to make a change and establish some of what I call the multidisciplinary teams. That's surgery and radiation, medical oncology. Some of that at that time was foreign to people. So I must say that while it was challenging, it was also opportune for me to move the specialty forward. And I think that that is probably one of the reasons, a combination of my contributions to the field of head and neck surgery and an inspiration that I believe I have been to many young surgeons has helped enormously, and I'm sure has been one of the reasons that I was recognized for the appointment as a member of the Order of Canada. As an Irishman, because we can never forget our background, I feel that I've given back to Ireland a lot, in that I have accepted and trained at least 8 or 10 senior people in Ireland in our specialty and many of the other subspecialties in surgery who have gone back to Ireland and lead the field in Dublin and in Galway and a little bit in some of the other towns, particularly in Dublin. So I think that I've given back quite a bit, Austin, and so I feel proud that I've been able to do that. And maybe, having immigrated, I may have been able to add a little bit more to and enhance the field of surgery in Ireland that I may not have had the opportunity to do otherwise. So I do feel blessed that I'm here.
Now, you do mention that you immigrated, of course, and that goes without saying, considering you're there and not where you came from. But that was a circuitous route. You did medicine initially in Galway?
That's correct. So I did my medical degree. I was born, as we said in Ballinasloe, did my medical degree, completed my medical degree from Galway University in 1970. And after that, in June of 1970, I was at a crossroads, really. And I began my voyage, as I felt it would help enormously to expand the breadth and depth of my medical knowledge to immigrate to North America. At that time, there were not as many people immigrating to North America. And I immigrated to Canada and interned at Victoria Hospital, London, Ontario, which is one of the hospitals accredited by the University of Western Ontario, a wonderful place. And I believe I selected at that time Canada because of the opportunities afforded, as I see it, to the medical graduates at that time. Canada at that time was independent from the Vietnamese War, so going to the United States was a little bit more complex and potentially get dragged into the war. And finally, to accompany two of my great friends who are already destined to immigrate to North America, that being Dr. Pat Kenny, who is now a dermatologist in Vancouver Island and married with two children, and Dr. Gus Conlon, who is back in practice in Innis, in County Clare. So I suppose I felt that Canada would give me the better opportunity to move forward, and I had at that time felt in my bones that I would eventually return to Ireland.
Well, when you say you felt in your bones that you would return to Ireland, had you an anticipation when you were leaving that you had a time span on that? Because a lot of times when people emigrate, they kind of say, well, I'm going to go for maybe 3 or 5 years.
Well, that's a great question, Austin. And basically, at the end of 2 years, I had finished 2 years of surgery. That was a time in which I kind of looked back and said, should I go back to Ireland, finish my surgical training there? But I was really, I suppose because I embarked on a surgical career, I saw the training at that time in Canada, and that's not the medical school, but the postgraduate training in the field of surgery, probably was more structured and organized in Canada. And so I then felt that I should stay and finish my training, which was another 4 years finishing and completing that in 1975. And then once I did that, I had again a sense that I may return to Ireland, and the University of Western Ontario decided that I should take some advanced training in what I had already loved. I was head and neck oncology, head and neck surgery, and so I did some extra training, went to the United States, where I really had two wonderful mentors, in that one of them was Dr. John Conley at Columbia University in New York. His grandparents had hailed from the west coast of Ireland. And after that, Dr. Marcus Converse from New York and Sebastian Arena in Pittsburgh. So I spent another 3 years in the United States doing advanced training in head and neck surgery and a reconstruction, which I felt was very, very important to this unfortunate patient population, i.e. the patients with head and neck cancers, in that many of them at that time had their cancer removed, but they were not reconstructed and were left with terrible deformities and deficiencies. And I think that that's been one of the areas that have impacted in the world. So again, fortunately, I think I took the right fork in the road. One never knows. As we always say, the great thing in the world is not so much where we stand as in what direction we are moving. And I think I hopefully moved in the right direction. And as I said, when I get back to the University of Western Ontario and then to Toronto, I had the opportunity to have some of the Irish graduates come and work with me and give them the opportunity that I had here to bring that extra knowledge and skills, if you will, and the research associated with the surgical specialty back to Ireland. And I'm proud that that they have continued to enhance the surgical specialties back in Ireland and taught and did clinical research, et cetera, et cetera.
When you mentioned this part of your work is the reconstruction after the removal of tumors for cancer, would that be to get into some of the day-to-day of what you do? When I read initially what your field was, I took it that probably was accident victims, but would your patient base be predominantly cancer victims?
No, it 90% of my work often is head and neck cancer. My background is what we call head and neck oncology, which is the which is really the therapy associated with the cancers of the throat. So I have my expertise in the area of managing patients with cancer that involve their tongue, the floor of mouth, their jaw, their sinus, down to their voice box, and right down to the upper end of their esophagus. But more importantly, over the years, I spearheaded and really, I think, in essence, in Canada, pioneered many of the approaches to take cancers that had gone up through the skull base and not into but onto the brain. And in conjunction with my neurosurgical colleague, and I'll have to select out Dr. Fred Gentile, who is the neurosurgeon that I began working with in the mid-80s, and that he would lift up the brain and I would take out the tumor below, and then I would bring in tissue from different parts of the body and reconstruct the skull-based defects so that the outcome had then went in the late 70s and 80s to from about 11-15% of the patients being cured up to today. We're blessed that over 55% of these patients now survive the cancers that have gone up through the skull base. So I think that that's been certainly one of the areas that I've impacted. And then also cancers of the mid-face, cancers of the mouth, and cancers back at the back of the tonsil. So when you take out the tongue and the floor of mouth and part of the jaw, then we bring in tissue today from other parts of the body and reconstruct the missing parts with parts from other parts of the body. That's from the foot or from the chest or from the back, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that that's certainly an area that I have made impact on and have impacted on over the years and have got to, and have been known for this work internationally. And I've been able to collaborate with my colleagues internationally as well in that area.
So, Pat, given that you've just come out of the operating room, you say it was a 10-hour day, was that just one operation today?
That was just one operation, Austin. It was a patient who had an advanced recurrent cancer of the voice box. Cancers of the throat, the voice box area, we try in every way to preserve the voice box, and they're usually treated with radiation, oftentimes combined with chemotherapy. And unfortunately, about 30-40% of those, despite the best efforts of our superb radiation facilities at the Princess Margaret Hospital, will recur. And they're the complex cases that we are then asked to take care of the recurrences. So this patient today I operated on was 47. She had been treated with radiation very effectively about 18 months ago. And unfortunately, now the tumor has come back, so we had to remove her voice box and part of her throat and the back of her tongue and then bring some tissue from the right side of her thigh up into the throat, which my colleague, Dr. Ralph Gilbert, my microsurgeon, who is in my department, was my fellow, whom I'm so proud of the people here that I have pretty well probably been involved in their career in enhancing their careers. He brings up that tissue, and then we sew it all in, make a new throat, and then we link up the vessels in the neck, and that's one of the real skills of Ralph, who is my fellow, and that is his job, and he does that very well. So then I patch it all up and then close it all up, and this patient within 12-14 days should be able to go home, eat and drink, and now we're able to also put in a small little speaking valve in those patients so that eventually they will be able to, not eventually, within 3 weeks, be able to speak as well. So even though you lose your voice box today, we now have the ability to put in a valve that will rehabilitate their voice and so that they get their voice back again. So it's certainly been very revolutionary, and I've seen all this occur and been part of this work over the last 20 years.
You must be exhausted having been there for on a day like today to come out of the operating room.
No, I'm not. It's like training for the Olympics, Austin. And that's what I always say to all the medical graduates and the surgical trainees. You know, it's you spend years at this, and it's like anyone. We're watching the wonderful Olympics tonight, and the Canadian teams and some of our Canadian athletes. I mean, they just don't just dance out on the ice or down the hills and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They've been in training for years. And what I say to all of the younger trainees today, and we have a large training program at the University of Toronto, have 28 residents, there's six per year, and then we have 19 fellows. Those are people who have already finished their training in surgery. So that that basically in their training, they got to get, you know, their work is going to be certainly stressful, et cetera, and we have some wonderful individuals. But again, it's preparing them for the future in doing this. And I've been at this for over 40 years since I started my residency in 1970, and I enjoy it today just as much as I did then. And I always say to people, I never know often when I'm working or playing, and I so enjoy the work that I do, that it is not boring, it doesn't kill me. I just very much feel that I have, such a great interest in this area to try effect change and to improve the quality of life of those unfortunate individuals that develop these terrible tumors about the head and neck. And as I always say, vision is the art of seeing the invisible, which I believe typifies our past, as I've always said, and is a vision for the future. So as we all look into the future, we have got to see how we can effect some change again. So I don't really honestly get tired, and I know some of my colleagues comment on that about Pat, but you know, I've been here, you can realize I'm more than 40 years of age and maybe 60, so I still enjoy it. And I suppose if you love what you're doing often, it isn't stressful.
Pat, we'll take a short break, and I know you mentioned this, John McDermott is a person you are very familiar with and known to you.
Yes.
So John singing Galway Bay.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Austin. That would be lovely.
We'll be back with you in a moment. You are listening to The Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM.
If you ever go across the sea to Ireland, then maybe at the closing of your day, you will sit and watch the moon rise over Clada and see the sun go down on Galway Bay. Just to hear again of the ripple of the trout stream, the women in the meadows making hay, and to sit beside a turf fire in the tavern and watch the barefoot gossams at their play. The breezes blowing o'er the seas from Ireland are perfumed by the heather as they blow, and the women in the uplands digging praties speak a language that the strangers do not know. For the strangers came and tried to teach us their way. They scorned us just for being what we are, but they might as well go chasing after moonbeams or light a penny candle from a star. If there's going to be a life hereafter, and somehow I am sure there's going to be, I will ask my God to let me make my heaven in that dear land across the Irish Sea. I will ask my God to let me make my heaven in that dear land across the Irish Sea.
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM. We're chatting with Dr. Pat Galan, and he is a member of the Order of Canada and a surgeon at the University Health Network, and has been practicing over 40 years, and being a good Irishman has achieved what all of us Irish like to achieve, and that is excellence. Pat, you mentioned when we chatted earlier on that you believe that possibly what drew attention to you was how you have been an inspiration and a guide to so many upcoming surgeons. It is a teaching hospital.
Yeah, the University Health Network is made up of three hospitals that were merged over the past 15 years, Austin. The Toronto General Hospital is one of the oldest hospitals in Canada, one of the premier hospitals, if I may say it, it is in Canada. And in 1997, it merged, as many of the other hospitals at the time, it merged with the Princess Margaret, which is the premier cancer center where the radiation is delivered and some surgery as well. And the Toronto Western Hospital, which was another wonderful institution, and the three were brought together under one board. So that actually helps to facilitate management, because at one site, like the Toronto General Hospital, we do mainly all the cancer surgery, the heart surgery, we do the major transplantation. Our transplant surgeons last year did over 500 surgical transplants. It's the premier transplant center in Canada. And we have the largest head and neck surgical service in Canada at the Toronto General Hospital site as well. Within my department, which is otolaryngology, head and neck surgery, we have seven affiliated hospitals where we rotate our residents who are in training. These people embark on a career where they're selected from a very wonderful group of young individuals, and they sign up for, or selected for, or recruited for through what we call the CARMS match. That's a match program right across the country. And we take six per year. And then they rotate between the seven, eight affiliated hospitals within the University of Toronto. The University of Toronto is the academic university. It has one of the largest medical schools in North America. We qualify or graduate over 240 people per year. And then the residency training within our hospital and our university is certainly the largest in Canada. And as you know, the University of Toronto is one of the premier universities in the world. It's number 19 in the world, and has superb facilities and has great leadership, and we have got a great faculty of medicine. It's outstanding faculty of medicine. So I wear two hats often. I wear a hat as the chief of otolaryngology head and neck surgery within the University Health Network, and also as chair of the Department of Otolaryngology, University of Toronto. So I continue to try to steer, if you will, the specialty to the best of my ability, so that there's no doubt in my mind we're in the top 3% of departments in North America. And that's been analyzed, done, and brought back to me through what we call bibliometric analysis. That's looking at the publications of your faculty, the awards, the grants, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel very proud that I've been able to lead this wonderful department. And what one must never forget is that one of the greatest resources you have is that the people who surround you. You kind of select the best people, and if you can select the best people, they will always make you look wonderful. So this institution has had a great history, and I think that I've helped to further enhance this subspecialty area, and also have been blessed in that I've been able to work with other subspecialties, in particular my colleagues in thoracic surgery, my colleagues in neurosurgery above and below the neck area. We sometimes overlap. Tumors just don't stop in the neck. As I said previously, they will sometimes go up to the skull base, and sometimes they don't stop at the level of the clavicle. They'll sometimes go down into the chest. So we have wonderful subspecialties. Our thoracic service is second to none in the world, having done the first single and double lung here in 1984 under the guidance of Dr. Joyce Cooper and Alex Patterson in 1984. And then our neurosurgical department is one of the largest in the world. So again, I feel that it is just a great privilege and honor to work in, to work within this institution and within this university. Both within the university and the hospital, we have great leaders. We have got great people. We've got great presidents. We've got great dean, and I've got great colleagues. And all I can say is that it has been my privilege and honor to have worked here, Alston.
If I was to ask you to comment on the health service within Ontario and the funding that is there because of waiting lists and people's access to it. As an administrator and also as a practitioner, do you find that you struggle with the system in any way?
Well, I think like everyone in the world, I have been around the world four or five times globally, circumferentially traveled around the world and been in somewhere almost 100 countries. And all I can say is that as you look, as you visit each department, each country, they all have challenges. We see our colleagues south of the border, and they're currently, their president is trying to embark on and try to improve on the care of people in the United States, where over 50 to 60 million people have no insurance. I believe that we in Canada, while we also have challenges, Austin, I think we have also many advantages in that we have a system that's portable within Canada. So if you're in Vancouver and you have some complex problem that can only be cared for in Toronto, the system provides portability, and the government of British Columbia will take care of you and pay for you here. And in return, it would be the same thing if someone in Ontario, they will care for you in Vancouver. So I think that there are many, many strengths to the universal healthcare system that we have in Canada. But there are some weaknesses, and we will continue to struggle with some of the weaknesses. And one of the greatest weaknesses is really the ability to for us to move forward, is that everything in medicine is expensive. We are aware of the many challenges, which include today the developments in transplantation, immune modulation. We have robotics. We're looking at tissue engineering, how we're going to grow tissue and tissue parts. Also, we have more focused, as I say, image-guided surgery, and we will be also looking at targeted therapy, how we get those little drugs into tumors in the peripheral areas, et cetera, et cetera. So we've been preparing for this for many years. We're going to see lots of changes. So again, Austin, our government, on one hand, while you can be critical, have been, our provincial government have been very supportive of our institutions. They do their best. They try to be as fair as they can. Also, our federal government provide us with significant support as well. So overall, as you look at it, I think that we're still in a system that while it is and it will be challenged financially, I think it is probably superior to most of the other healthcare plans globally. And as you can see, our Americans ask how we're doing in Canada, and we continue to struggle and say, would private practice be better, and would we have an insurance funded system, would that be better here? I don't think so. I honestly believe in my heart of hearts that to give everyone the best opportunity to be cared for, Austin, I think the Canadian system, while it has some pitfalls, it has many strengths. And I think at this time I'm happier to be living in Canada than any other country in the world for that reason, because health is so important. We're going to see big challenges in the next 15 to 20 years with the aging at the apex. As the population get older, we are having, you know, people are living longer, their quality of life is better, but the cost is significant as well. And somewhere I'm sure we'll be able to work through it, that everyone will be, the system will be protected to some degree.
I'm going to switch gears here, because we didn't touch on at all, but what does Pat Gillan do when he's not working?
Oh, my God. What does Pat Gillan do when he's not working? Well, let me put it over the years, I suppose I have had many hobbies. When I was in Garbley, I played handball and I played tennis. And I did a lot of cycling and did cross-country running at that time. I was, if you will, a harrier. And in my teens, often I was interested in, again, long-distance running in my 20s and 30s. Then when I came to Canada, I developed a passion for squash. I just loved it when I was at the University of Western Ontario. And then at the same time, I embarked on downhill skiing. What Irish immigrants, when they come here, wouldn't at least try skiing? And I just loved it. And more recently, because of my son, John, and my daughter, Kira, but more importantly, my son, John, I embarked on golf. And I had a patient who gave me the opportunity to work with his pro to try to get me up to scratch, and I have. So I now enjoy a little golf in the summertime. Other than that, I travel a lot as part of I speak around the world a lot. I give lots of lectures everywhere, and I try to take in some of the scenery and be educated, if you will, when I travel. So I suppose travel, golf in the summertime, and as I said, the squash in the past certainly kept me healthy and physically active. And then I so much enjoy some downtime with Barbara, my lover, my wonderful partner. Barbara's an OBGYN in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology with a subspecialty area here and specialty in vitro fertilization. That's where those unfortunate people, when they can't get pregnant, and she is one of the leaders in that field in Canada. And Barb is incredibly supportive. So we enjoy time together. We enjoy some walking, and we enjoy traveling. And as I said, I enjoy golf in the summer.
Dr. Pat Gillan, I know we have run out of time, and we're going to be leaving our listeners with a piece of music about your mom's hometown, the fields of Athenry. And I know you enjoy that piece, and it's Paddy Riley's version. I want to thank you for taking time out of a hectic schedule and spending it talking and sharing with us here in the Gaeilge.
Well, thank you very much, Austin, and I so appreciate the opportunity to share some of my tour, if you will, my voyage over the past 40 years in Canada. And it was a great pleasure and honor for me to get caught up and to be able to talk to you again after those years of absence. And please extend my best wishes to your family as well. So to all of you, thank you so much, Austin, and thank you again.
By a lonely prison wall, I heard a young girl calling. Michael, they have taken you away, for you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now a prison ship lies waiting in the bay. Low lie the fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. So long be round the fields of Athenry. by a lonely prison wall, I heard a young man calling. Nothing matters, Mary, when you're free. Against the famine and the crown, I rebel, they cut me down. Now you must raise our child with dignity.
You've been listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron, and I do want to thank you for taking the time to listen. There will be no Gaelic Hour tomorrow night. We have moved from Monday evenings to a 2-hour slot on Sunday mornings, commencing next Sunday, and that will be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. We will continue the format of the magazine show first, and then in the second hour we will have our music. And if you would like to win a pair of tickets to the Cayley, St. Colfus Cayley on the 13th of March, visit the Gaelic Hour website and you'll find a link there, and you could be the lucky winner, and we'll announce next weekend who that might be. This program will be available as a podcast on the internet very, very shortly. So until next Sunday morning, when we will have an update for you on the events of the Ottawa Irish Festival, in addition to introducing you to David Rankin and some other guests that I have lined up, this is Austin Cameron saying thank you very much indeed. Have a wonderful day. Slán go fóill.
By a lonely harbor wall, she watched the last star falling. And the prison ship sailed out against the sky. For she lived in hope and pray for her love in Botany Bay. It's so lonely round the fields of battle cry. Low-lie the fields of battle cry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry.